The Progressive Years, 1862 to 1876, Volume 2, Chapter 30. 1874, James White again in the saddle. The Michigan camp meeting was scheduled to open in Battle Creek on Thursday, August 6th, and continue to Tuesday, August 17th. It had been decided that the 13th Annual General Conference session would be held on the campground in connection with the camp meeting. The official notice called for the session to open Monday morning, August 10th. The session and the camp meeting would share time from day to day. Uriah Smith reported that there were 91 tents on the ground, with between 1,200 and 1,300 believers occupying them. As to the services, he reported, during the 11 days of the meeting, 25 discourses were given, 6 by Brother White, 5 each by Brethren Butler and Andrews, and Sister White, 3 by Brother Haskell, and 1 by Brother Rogers, delegate from the S.D. Baptists. The word was spoken with great power and clearness. Especially was the speaking of Brother White thus characterized throughout. Never, we believe, did he make better points or present the great truths of this message with more clearness and force. The involuntary response of many hearts was thank God for the freedom he gives his servant, and the physical strength that is granted for the ardent labors into which his truth-inspired soul is constantly leading him. The same may be said of Sister White, Brother Butler, and others. The Lord signally helped his servants, the Review and Herald, August 18, 1874. Of course, James White brought an encouraging report of the work on the Pacific Coast. He told of his commencing to publish Signs of the Times, and of his hope for a publishing house to be established soon in the West. It was his hope to return shortly, with the full endorsement of the General Conference and the promise of support for what was being done there. An unexpected and significant turn in affairs. The nominating committee brought in its report on Thursday. Considering the now generally accepted views on leadership, expressed at the last session by G.I.U. Butler, it was no surprise that James White's name should head the list, calling for him to be president of the General Conference. Further recommendations were that Uriah Smith should serve as secretary and Harmon Lindsay as treasurer. For the General Conference Committee, the nominations called for James White, George I. E. Butler, and S.N. Haskell. The report was heartily accepted. It certainly turned the plans of James and Ellen White around, for now Battle Creek would be their base of operations. Resolutions passed were few and well considered. The first reading, resolved that we hail with joy the cheering reports of the progress of the work on the Pacific Coast and approve the action of Elder James White in establishing a much-needed paper in the interests of the present truth in that section of our country, and whereas, the cause west of the Rocky Mountains is new, and its friends comparatively few, and Brother White should not be left to bear the burden of conducting an office. Thereon his own financial responsibility, therefore resolved, that we recommend to the trustees of the SDA Publishing Association to authorize Elder George I. Butler to act in behalf of the board at the California State Conference to be held in connection with their annual camp meeting, October 1874, in conferring with that conference relative to the establishment of a branch office of publication on the Pacific Coast IBID, August 25, 1874. Actions were taken in support of the tract enterprise in calling for drawing its interests together into a general organization to be known as the General Conference Tract and Missionary Society of Seventh-day Adventists. Guidelines were set forth in the form of a constitution. There was an action of renewed consecration, and one relating to the thrust that would shortly be made in missionary endeavor in sending J.N. Andrews to Europe as soon as practicable. Facing large responsibilities, there was no place Ellen White would rather be than in Battle Creek. Their home on the corner had been rented to E.B. Gaskill, who had served as General Conference Treasurer, and it was soon made available to them. Relieved theoretically, at least of responsibilities in California, James White turned his attention to the general interests of the work of the church as a whole and to the institutions in Battle Creek, particularly the developments in the denominational school. In his editorial in the Review that carried the report of the General Conference session, he presented his reactions to the sudden changes and challenges the activities that meeting brought about. Never were we so fully impressed, he wrote, with the fact that the responsibilities of a worldwide mission were pressing upon our people, as during the religious services and the business sessions at the recent Michigan camp meeting. IBID. He wrote of the publication of literature in other languages, of the need of workers to enter new fields, at home and overseas, and then of the change in the plans for his work. We have felt, and still feel, the deepest interest for the cause on the Pacific. But it will not do to calculate upon a millennium to establish the cause there. Our wealthy men and women on the Pacific coast must help out with their means, cautiously urge new gifts into the field, and give the cause a chance to grow upon the Pacific as it has in other parts. Failing health and discouragements had led us to withdraw from the general cause to confine our labors to the Pacific coast. But we find ourselves since the Battle Creek camp meeting with our former plans completely changed, and we now resign all to the will of God and the choice of His dear people. For several years we have been refusing responsibilities, especially such as would make it necessary for us to have our headquarters at Battle Creek. But the marked indications of providence, in harmony with the wish of our people, assembled in the name of the Lord, with His Spirit upon them, have led us to yield to be a servant wherever may be their choice, Ibid. Then turning more particularly to the interests in California with which he had been so closely linked, he explained, "The General Conference has approved of what steps we have taken in establishing the press upon the Pacific, and take the responsibilities as well as the liabilities off our hands. They send Elder Butler to the California camp meeting to counsel with that conference as to the proper steps to be taken to advance the cause on the Pacific. His practical gift being new will be enjoyed by all with the deepest interest, as well as with the greatest profit. We shall ever cherish the tenderest regards for our dear people on the Pacific coast, and when it shall please God, we shall be happy to meet them and labor for their prosperity. But for the present we must heed the calls of those who have greater claims upon us," Ibid. As he was now leading out in both the interests of the Publishing Association and the General Conference, he suggested, "If our friends west of the plains will support a weekly paper, our Committee on Publications and the editors of the Review and Herald can greatly aid in the management of it and in furnishing matter for it," Ibid. The Eastern Camp Meetings were scheduled to open in Vermont on August 20th and run till September 28th in Indiana. It had been James White's hope, and that of the believers in the several states, that both he and his wife could attend. But the duties in Battle Creek were too pressing, therefore Ellen White, accompanied by Lucinda Hall, started out with the second Eastern meeting at South Lancaster. From there she wrote James on Friday, August 28th, "We arrived here this morning, all safe, considerably tired. The elders were looking anxiously for us both, were much disappointed in not seeing you. They say there was great disappointment upon the Vermont campground among all, but the Lord helped Brethren Haskell and Butler and they had an excellent meeting, but this did not cure the disappointment of the outsiders. There was a great turnout, expecting Elder White and wife from California would be there. Brother Butler has this forenoon cautioned the people to let me rest and not exhaust me with much visiting. While he was speaking, I lay down and rested and slept some. Shall be upon the stand to speak in a few moments. My heart is fixed, trusting in God. I shall wait upon the Lord. I shall cry to Him in faith for His help and His power, and I believe we shall see of His salvation. God will be our helper." Letter 49, 1874. The next camp meeting was in Maine. This gave Ellen an opportunity to visit three of her sisters. Elizabeth, her twin sister, joined her in the Maine meeting. "Her sympathies are with us," Ellen wrote, "yet she takes no open stand. She accompanied me in the desk and sat, on the platform, with me till I had got through speaking." She commented further, "We had an excellent meeting in Maine. About 2,000 people were out on Sunday. I never heard Brother Andrews do as well as he did in Maine. He leaves for Europe next week. Our prayers are that God may go with him." Letter 50B, 1874. Writing to James from Kirkville, New York, on September 10th, she said, "I feel so sorry that you have had a burden-bearing time. Every time you thought you might go with me to the meetings I felt greatly pleased, but I did not dare urge you. He was unable to get to the New York meeting." Letter 51, 1874. California and the publishing interests. Quite naturally, both James and Ellen White watched for news of the steps being taken in regard to the signs and the possibility of establishing a publishing house in the West. When Ellen had left Oakland in June to visit the East and raise much-needed money for the new enterprises, James called for the assistance of Edson, who in Battle Creek had gained some knowledge of the printing business, to come west to help him there. Edson went and applied himself well. When James, after publishing five numbers, left for the General Conference on July 29th, he left Edson to get out the paper on a reduced schedule. Loughborough gave editorial counsel and help. One number was issued in August and one in September. Things were almost at a standstill until the California camp meeting to be held in early October. There was talk of possibly publishing the signs in Battle Creek, but when Butler got onto the campground at Yountville, he found a strong current running in favor of publishing in California and of establishing a publishing institution there. He reported from Yountville on Thursday, October 8th, "We have had under consideration the establishment of the press here, and the acceptance of the offer made by Brother White and the General Conference. The brethren here felt a great interest that the paper should not leave this coast. As soon as I came onto the ground, they began to talk about it. Some questioned as to means, etc., and there seemed to be some doubt in the minds of a few. But this morning in our session of conference, after the matter was fully presented and explained, the feelings of the brethren were expressed. The conference unanimously voted to assume the responsibility of the matter, and the congregation as a whole voted for it with much good feeling. They have since entrusted the matter of publishing the paper to the State Conference Committee until the legal association is formed. We shall soon raise pledges on the paper, and I shall greatly mistake the feelings of this people if there is not a very liberal subscription raised. The Review and Herald, October 20, 1874. Butler's report in the next issue of the Review told the triumphant story. He had hoped for pledges of $10,000, but the California Brethren went far beyond that. Sunday morning was the time chosen to raise means. The conference had decided to assume the responsibility of the paper. Now it was to be shown what they meant and how much real interest they had. The wants of the cause were set before them about as usual at our camp meetings, and though some were impatient for us to get through, they were so anxious to put down their pledges, we took about the usual time to give the facts concerning the progress of the work and the responsibilities resting upon the people here. We were all greatly and happily surprised to see the readiness of the people to pledge of their means for the establishment of the paper. Over $19,300 were pledged to be paid by a year from next January, 1876, for the paper, with the understanding that an association should be formed as soon as the place could be fixed for it to be located, with shares similar to the one at Battle Creek. There were two who pledged $1,000 each, 12 who pledged $500 each, and 51 who signed $100 each, besides those who signed sums between Ibid, October 27, 1874. Butler had read to the conference an address by James White that he carried with him, in which White urged the California Brethren to do their duty. White offered a donation of $6,000 from the Eastern Brethren for the purchase of a steam press and all the material complete and sufficient to print the signs of the times. Delegates were quick to take steps to hold the publishing interest on the West Coast, the signs of the times, October 22, 1874. There was disappointment that James White would not be there to directly carry the responsibilities, but Butler assured them that White had been called to greater responsibilities in Battle Creek. We are confident of this, however, that as a mother cannot forget her child, so Brother White will not forget the signs over which he has thought, planned, and prayed, both in the mountains of Colorado and California. He has not bid us goodbye forever in taking other and greater responsibilities, but he leaves the assurance that he will help us with his counsel, influence, and pen. Ibid. It was thought for a brief time that the paper should be moved to Woodland, California, to the printing office of William Saunders, a firm believer. One number, October 22, carried a Woodland dateline, but was actually printed in Oakland. Saunders did not have a power press and could not work for the standard Adventist top pay of $12 per week. Under the supervision of the California Conference Committee, or rather, for the most part, of J. N. Loughborough, issues came from the press in Oakland at irregular intervals until February, 1875. When the Yountville camp meeting was over, the large tent was taken to San Francisco, where well-advertised meetings were begun in mid-October, with Cantwright, Loughborough, and Butler leading out. These meetings, yielding a fairly good harvest, continued until near the close of December. The Review and Herald, December 17, 1874. While the California camp meeting was being held, James and Ellen White attended the camp meeting at Lapeer, Michigan. This served the northeastern part of that state. Between 400 and 500 Sabbath keepers occupied 31 church tents. James and Ellen each spoke four times. On Sunday, 3,000 persons crowded in to hear James in the morning and his wife in the afternoon. This closed the 1874 camp meeting season. Concerned for the most effective work in California as they watched reports of developments in California through October, James and Ellen White had wavered as to just the course they should take. For a time, they felt they must hurry west to help with the work there. Ellen White was deeply concerned that as the workers might relax, rare opportunities that were opening to spread the message would be missed. To Butler, working with the tent meeting in San Francisco, she wrote, "Do not forget that pulpit labor must be followed by private effort. Brother Loughborough ought not to bend his mind to much writing now while this effort is being made. The greatest success attends those who come in as close relation as possible with those with whom they labor, gain their sympathy and confidence, visit at their homes, those who appear interested, pray with them and for them. In this way only will the direction be followed to go out in the highways and hedges, and compel them to come in. It is this fireside effort, this homework, that is attended with signal success. Try it, brethren, in the ministry. Some of our ministers do not love this kind of labor. They shun it. There is a cross attached to such personal efforts, but this is the labor the people must have if they embrace unpopular truth. In this close contact with souls who are in darkness, our light may shine more effectually, directly in the darkness, and they will see by our deportment, our conversation, our solemn yet cheerful courteous manners, that the grace of God is with us, that the peace of heaven is brought into their homes. They will be charmed with the truth, which is attended with such blessed results. Letter 55, 1874. The winter Michigan or California? The steps taken at the General Conference session in August thrusting James White into the position of leadership brought, as we have seen, an unexpected and complete turn in their affairs. The outgoing General Conference treasurer, to whom they had rented their home in Battle Creek, vacated it, and they moved in immediately. But they were somewhat uncertain concerning the immediate future. Ellen White felt very comfortable living in Battle Creek, but their hearts were in California. On November 16th she wrote to Edson, "This is a very important post. Here is the great heart of the work, and every pulsation of this heart is felt throughout the body. If the heart is unsound, if it is unhealthy, the entire system or every member must be affected. Satan aims his attacks directly where there is vital interest. It is highly important that the fort here is kept, that there be faithful sentinels here. We would so much rejoice to spend the winter in California and escape the cold winter before us if we remain in Michigan. We did not settle our house for weeks, it is partially settled now. We knew we were needed here. Our people here set right about the work of arrangements to bind us to the work here and to them as fast as possible. They furnished the nice large room in the review office above the counting room with every convenient sofa, sofa chairs, editor's chair, bureau, washstand, and your mother a very nice sofa chair. In other respects, they have been very attentive to our wants in settling our house. We are now quite well settled and feel that we can spend our winter here if Father does not work too hard and get down." Letter 63, 1874. For a time they had thought that they might be called to California almost immediately to get the publishing interests well established. But no word came, and they settled back to spend the winter in Michigan. As she closed her letter, she reported, "We now make arrangements to stay. Our potatoes for all winter are in the cellar, our apples are in the cellar, also our squashes and some canned fruit a limited supply. Carpets are down, goods moved. Everything is now prepared to spend the winter. We shall labor here in the fear of God as best we can, and we will pray and have faith for those who are engaged in the work in California." Ibid. The pressing need for a well-trained ministry. One deep concern shared by James and Ellen White was for a well-qualified ministry. A large part of the working forces in the field were self-trained, strongly dedicated men who, having reached a good degree of proficiency through diligent study and the blessing of God, had been pressed into public ministry. Stephen N. Haskell and Dudley M. Cantwright may be cited as examples. Cantwright, the oldest son in a southern Michigan farm family, had listened favorably to the preaching of the third angel's message at a tent meeting. He secured and devoured Adventist books, studied his Bible day and night, and soon longed to convert others to his newfound faith. His first convert was his own mother. At about the age of 21, Cantwright felt the call to the ministry. He went to Battle Creek and sought out James White and spent an hour with him. White related the incident. "I said to him, 'Do not content yourself with being a small preacher, but be somebody, or die trying. Do not go out to be a pet, but go out into the field, with the weight of the work upon you, with steady principles, and stand your ground.' The last thing I did was to present him with one of our English Bibles and a pair of charts, saying as I did so, 'Here, Dudley, take these, and go out and try it. When you become satisfied that you have made a mistake, bring them back.' The next May, at the conference, I met him and asked him, 'What about those charts in the Bible?' He replied, 'Brother White, you have lost them. Thank God. I would like to lose more in the same way.' We raised means to purchase a library for Brother Cantwright and Brother Van Horn. And said I to them, 'When you study, study with all your might, and when you visit, visit with all your might, and exercise briskly. Whatever you do, do it with all your might.'" The Review and Herald, May 20, 1873, see also Carrie Johnson, "I Was Cantwright's Secretary," pages 12-14. James and Ellen White watched with interest as the walls for a denominational college building rose to a height of 3 stories in the summer and fall of 1874. Dedication was to be Monday, January 4, 1875. Planning for a biblical institute between the closing of classes for the fall term and the dedication of the new buildings, there would be a 3-week period. What a unique opportunity, reasoned James White, to call the ministers of the denomination together for a training period. The Review of September 29, 1874, carried his proposal. He headed it Biblical Institute. "It is proposed to hold in Battle Creek, Michigan, about the middle of December next, a series of exercises to be conducted by Elders White, Smith, and others, which the name above given will probably describe it as well as any. The work proposed to be done is to give instruction theoretical and practical in regard to the presentation of the present truth before the people, as teachers' institutes give instruction in regard to the theory and practice of teaching. The object to be accomplished is to aid our preachers in a better preparation for the work of publicly presenting the truth, and to instruct such as may be desirous of at once engaging in that work, who know not how to spend a long time in preparing. The exercises will consist of, say, 2 lectures each day, with reviews and examinations, and the time employed will be about 3 weeks. Ibid, September 29, 1874. He called upon those interested, old or young, to send in word as to their interest. The response was enthusiastic, and 2 weeks later he announced the dates from December 15 until the opening of the new school building, January 4, 1875. The attendance, he commented, will doubtless be large. Ibid, October 13, 1874. In a back page note in the review, he could joyfully inform the readers, "The work is moving everywhere. We have work for 5 winters that we would like to do in the very next. We are able to accomplish thrice the amount of labor at present that we have been able to do at any time during the past 3 years. And Mrs. White comes from the excessive labors of the past season with better health and courage than at any time in her life. God is good. He helps those who are willing to wear out, and lets those have their way who choose to rust out." Ibid, November 3, 1874. 150 attend the Institute. The Biblical Institute opened on Tuesday evening, December 15, according to plan, with about 150 in attendance, and the promise of abundant success. James White gave the Sabbath morning address on the 19th, employing a large, painted chart of the way of life, showing the harmony of the two testaments, and pointing out the presence of Christ in all the Bible, and that his work is not confined to the present dispensation. Ibid, December 22, 1874. The presentation was well received, and the chart was reduced to a steel engraving that in the years to come had wide distribution. The concept of such a pictorial design was that of M.G. Kellogg. Over a period of several years, the pictorial representation was improved. Copies in color are available from the Ellen G. White estate. J. H. Wagoner reported on the Sabbath afternoon meeting. Sister White made one of her most powerful appeals, directed especially to the ministers and those who expect to engage in the ministry, but applicable to all. At the close, there was a call made to come forward for prayers, but it was in vain to carry out the design of giving place to those who desired to seek a closer walk with God. The whole house was moved. It was a solemn time. Ibid, December 22, 1874. One of the men attending from Ohio, O.T. Noble, gave a report, in which he stated, "The first thing I will speak of is how we were received. A committee previously chosen held themselves in readiness to wait upon every newcomer and conduct him to a home with someone of the families composing the Battle Creek Church, and judging from my own experience and what I have heard from others, we feel justified in saying that we fare sumptuously. So far, the lectures have been conducted by Brethren J. White and U. Smith. The able and patient manner in which they handle the subjects, and answer the many curious, ingenious, and intricate questions submitted to them in writing and orally, will certainly give them a large place in our confidence and in our hearts. The time devoted to lectures, including that used in asking and answering questions, is from 9 to 11 a.m., from 2 to 4 o'clock, and 6 to 8 p.m., giving us plenty to do. I cannot close this article without a few words about the preaching, all of which thus far has been done by Brother and Sister White. I wish to say that whatever opinion people may form by reading, I venture the assertion that no fine-minded person can listen to either of them and not feel assured that God is with them. Sister White's style and language is altogether solemn and impressive, and sways a congregation beyond description and in a direction always heavenward. Brother White's language, manner, and style are inspiring and well calculated to lift us up." Ibid, January 8, 1875. The experiment of calling the ministers together for intensive Bible study was eminently successful, and it initiated a program that continued for several years.